book to study, to look at in this season. In the devotional, Hope Under the Bethlehem Skies, they talked about that we're all familiar with the Christmas story, but Ruth talks to us about the story behind the story, what Christmas ultimately comes from, what the Old Testament was pointing forward to. It's the story behind the story of Jesus. And you see the story of the scriptures in it. That's a story of God's promise and then his fulfillment. It's a story, even as you may have caught in the first five verses, it's very dark. It's a story of darkness to light. It's a story of famine to fullness. So it captures this idea of Advent, this longing we have for things to be set right, an acknowledgement that things aren't right. And so the book of Ruth helps us better understand the story of Christ, the story of Christmas. Now, not surprisingly, the book of Ruth has very many different perspectives. People have very many purposes that it's trying to accomplish. And a lot of times with scripture or the Bible or something, people often will say, like, this is the purpose. I'm usually a little bit more diplomatic. And I was like, well, it can have multiple purposes, right? And so I think we can capture that. But my hope for this series is that it will slow us down, that it would captivate our minds, that we would better understand who Jesus is and what he's accomplished for us through the book of Ruth. And so some of these different perspectives that people have on what's the purpose of this book that we're going to be in for the next 5 weeks, including Christmas Eve, are one, it's just a great story. As Robbie said, it's just a narrative. It's a beautiful story. Other people will look at that it's got great themes. There might be a slide for this, that it's just got great themes that we can learn from and grow in. Ultimately, it is about how great God is. So the first idea is that it's just a great story. Some people will try and figure out, like, hey, what's the purpose? What's the purpose? And they say, just like, leave it alone and enjoy it. Just it's entertainment, which is true. I encourage you, which I've been doing each day, is just read through it through this season of Advent. Read through the story from front to back. It won't take you very long. It's only four chapters. Just read through it and enjoy the story. Get caught up in it. But I think there's also more than just entertainment. I think it's to be enjoyed because it resonates so well. It's the story behind every story. It's a story that we're all aware of. The devotional said that it's a story that is all is not right in the world. It's a story of sadness. It's a story of tears. Story even of death. I think that's why sometimes we get so into the lights and into the trees and into the presence. Right? Why? We want to numb some pain. We want to not deal with some hard things. But this story compels us to. But it's not just a story of brokenness. It's a story of love where ultimate hope is found, even in the darkest of places. So it's a story that gives us hope. So it is a great story. It also has great themes. In it, we can learn what it means to be the people of God. The theologians will say it's about edification. It's how we ought to be, how we ought to live. A book from Paul Miller called The Loving Life talks about some of these themes. There's themes of love, what love actually is, what love cost. There's themes of the gospel. How does the theme of love help us understand God's love for us? What Jesus came to accomplish. There's themes of kindness. It's a word that's used throughout Hesed. It means a steadfast, a committed, a loyal love. It's a story of redemption. That love is actually costly. It shows what it means to be a community. It teaches us how to lament. We see it even in Naomi. How do you relate to God when it seems like he's deserted you? When life doesn't go the way that you think it should go? It teaches us how to pray. What does a praying life look like? It gives these pictures of both biblical femininity and masculinity. When our world and our culture has just sort of like flattened such sexuality and try to remove it from everything, it's just like, no. There's a beauty and being feminine, and being a woman. There's a beauty in being masculine and being a man. A word for Ruth, Boaz calls her a worthy woman. It's the same word that's used in Proverbs 31. It talks about this is what God has created women to be. It gives us a picture of Boaz. And it looks like, what does it look like to be a godly man? How do you combine gentleness and power? Who are we called to be as men and women? It gives us vision to how to treat the most vulnerable. It's about immigrants. It's about widows. It's about sojourners, the people who are most in need in our world. How are we to respond to them? How are we to care for them? How are we to provide for them? So there's all these great themes that we're going to dive into the next 4 or 5 weeks. Paul Miller in his book said, the story of Ruth can transform you if you allow it to remap your own story and draw you into a life of love. In a world that's losing its capacity to feed our souls, I hope that the book of Ruth fills your soul and then overflows into your life. It's an opportunity to have our lives remapped, to live according to the ways that God calls us to. I do want to talk about 2 resources. If you want to dive further into this, and I invite you to. One I just quoted, it's called A Loving Life by Paul Miller, and it's through the perspective of Ruth. What does it look like to live this life of loyalty, of commitment, of sacrifice? You see it in Boaz as well, this costly love. And then the second one is Not for the Faint of Heart. It's by Larry Crabb, who is a therapist, a theologian, a counselor. And it's written from the perspective of Naomi. What do you do when your life doesn't go the way that you intended it to go? How do you respond to a God when he seems to be distant and far and not doing what you would like him to do? How do we relate to God in that way? It's hard, it's heavy, but it's after our joy, which is what the subtitle talks about. He wants us to have a deeper purpose, a deeper joy, a deeper hope than things that are on the surface. So maybe you're in a world kind of shattered dreams, of darkness, of life not going the way that you want. I invite you to read that book along with us these next week. But ultimately, the book of Ruth is about God. When Dean Ulrich said, the book of Ruth is not about Ruth or Naomi or Boaz, although they're the 3 main characters at all. It's all about God. It's a story of his providence, his working to bring about his purposes through the lives of very ordinary people in an ordinary place at an ordinary time. Ulrich said, the human characters are, of course, involved in the story, but they are not what the book is foremost about. They do not appear for their own sake. Hence, the book of Ruth is not a biography. God, not Naomi, Ruth, or Boaz, is the main character. And he works through the human characters to advance his sovereign and redemptive purposes. So we see God working through the lives of these very ordinary people. And it's a reminder and it's an invitation to us that God can work through our lives, ordinary people, in extraordinary ways. And why we are doing this at Advent is because God's great purposes would come through this coming king. If you flip to the end of the book, it weirdly ends with a genealogy. It's like, beautiful story. And then we just got done with Genesis. It says in 4:18, now these are the generations of Perez. Like, it's just like, why is that there? Can't read some of the names. Then in verse 21, it says, Salmon fathered Boaz, and Boaz fathered Obed, and Obed fathered Jesse, and Jesse fathered David. It's about this coming king that would come, King David, that was supposed to rescue, to redeem, to set things right. But we went through 1 and 2 Samuel a couple of years ago, and we realized that David fell short. He didn't accomplish God's purposes, and he was just a pointer to the ultimate King Jesus. And what we'll see on Christmas is that the book of Matthew starts the same way as the book of Ruth ends. Matthew 1 says, the book of genealogy of Jesus Christ, the son of David, the son of Abraham. Verse 5 says, and Salmon fathered the father of Boaz by Rahab, and Boaz fathered Obed by Ruth, and Obed fathered Jesse, and Jesse the father of David the king. And the genealogy ends in verse 16, and it says, and Jacob the father of Joseph, the husband of Mary, whom Jesus was born, who is called Christ. Ruth is about a greater story of God working his plans, his purposes, for our good and his glory. So that's the invitation. In the midst of the busyness, in the midst of the good things, the lights in the darkness, they all have meaning. In the midst of the trees, in the midst of the presence, take time to slow down. It's our prayer for this series, that we would slow down during the busyness to engage and ask questions about both the beauty and the brokenness of this world, the beauty and brokenness of our lives, to stop and see the goodness and beauty of God in the midst of the challenges of this world. This chapter one is a helpful church in Nashville. They just titled it Hope in the Wasteland. And I think that's an apt title because we see Naomi was in the wasteland. Her life has been devastated. Her life had not gone the way that she wanted. She goes to Moab, which was the enemies of God. It's literally referred to by some commentators as a wasteland. But it's in the midst of her darkness that she finds hope, that God provides, that God shows up. And so I want to give us some categories over chapter one. And then my encouragement is that you dive deeper into them throughout this week. But we'll see the devastating loss. Then we'll see this devoted love that Ruth has for Naomi. And then we'll see a dawning of light, some glimpses of grace that come into Ruth's life. But this whole account starts with this devastating loss. For how shocking these five verses are, there's like zero explanation. God just says, like, this word just said, this is what happened. God doesn't try to justify himself, doesn't explain it away. Why do bad things happen? He just said, this is what happened. One reason for that is that the hard things that happened are not the primary concern of the book. It's not the primary concern of the author. He just said, this is what happened. But we can learn some things from this loss that Naomi had. Verse 1 says, in the days when the judges ruled, there was a famine in the land. It says, and a man of Bethlehem in Judah went to sojourn in the country of Moab, he and his wife and his two sons. It says, in the days of when the judges ruled, if you just look to your left, it's the book of Judges. And the book of Judges is all about a time where people had turned from God. Kind of the theme of the book is that people had done what was right in their own eyes. So this is a time when people had turned from God, had rebelled God, were not listening to God, weren't about his plans, weren't about his purposes, weren't about his word. And it says that there was a famine in the land. It doesn't say, again, why a reason for this, but often in the Old Testament, a consequence for turning from God was famine. He withheld his hand. And it's very ironic because it says that they were in Bethlehem, which literally means the house of bread. This was supposed to be the house of flourishing, the house of bread, a house of provision. And so you have this family who is going through a famine, and we can knock them. How could they do this? But also, have you guys ever been in like desperate situations and you feel like you have like two options and they're both terrible? So they're looking at bad options, like stay in the famine or leave and try and go find food. I think about that a lot. If my family was in need, if we had something, you get desperate. You will do anything. And it doesn't say why, but it says that they left to go to Moab. Moab was about 50 miles south, and it was a place that were the enemies of God. It was started from the lineage of Lot. And there was a lot of emphasis on this place, and I won't get super into it, but basically like people would call it a wasteland. And you're like, oh, they weren't that bad. They like sacrificed children. It was a place of darkness and evil and against God and his people. So they left this place of Bethlehem, of God, this house of bread, where it was the place of God, the presence of God, the people of God, the provision of God. And they went to the wasteland, a place that did not have the presence of God or the people of God or the provision of God. And then when they get there, it does not go well. The husband, Elimelech, he dies. Verse 3, but Elimelech, the husband of Naomi, died, and she was left with her two sons. then the two sons, which again isn't biblical, Mary, and it says in verse 4, they took Moabite wives. The name of the one was Orpah, and the name of the other Ruth. And it says they lived there for about 10 years. And both Mahlon and Chilion died. The two sons died, so that the woman was left without her two sons and her husbands. Again, it went bad fast. So Naomi is there. She's left alone, a widow, with her two daughter-in-laws in this wasteland. And so needless to say, all of Naomi's dreams and hopes would have been shattered. This isn't how she envisioned her life. You guys ever get there? You ever get to a place where like, hey, I didn't think this is how it was going to go. This is what Larry Crabb calls the shattered dreams. When you have desires for your life, even good, godly desires, and life doesn't happen that way. It doesn't go that way. It doesn't end up as you intended for it to go. This is where Naomi was. Her dreams have been shattered. Crabb says, in one form or another, we all go through that experience. If not yesterday, then today. If not today, then tomorrow. And the question becomes, how do we respond? What happens in us when life throws an unexpected curve our way? When the second shoe drops soon after the first? It was enough to lose her husband. What'd she do? She lost her sons as well. Remember, there was a season a few years ago. It felt like one shoe was dropping after another. We were disoriented. We were dizzy. It was darkness. We didn't know where to go. Most often, how do we respond? He says, most often a more visible self-concern surfaces as the strongest passion we feel. I just need to get through this. He says, it takes many forms, often self-pity. Why is this happening to me? Why am I going through this? I don't deserve this. He says, sometimes a hardened determination to survive. This is how the family responded. We're going to get through this. We're going to get through. This was a strength and a weakness of my mom. We went through a lot. She would always say, however you respond is how your kids are going to respond. And that means you pick your head up and you go and you get through it. Not a lot of emotion. We're just going to be okay. This is how I can respond to stuff. We can do that. We'll get through it. We'll be okay. Just keep going forward. A hardened determination to survive. Perhaps a relentless demand that someone see our pain and care. We become needy. We want other people to over-empathize with us. But more often, it's a decision to hide, to let no one see our real struggles. That's what most of us do with our pain, do with our shattered dreams. How do we know this? How are you doing? Fine. Fine. Everything's fine. Right? We hide it. It's one of the things I love about Naomi. She doesn't hide it. She's like, I'm bitter. I'm miserable. God did this all to me. You're like, hey, you forgot a couple things. You forgot you left God. You married off your daughters. Right? But she's honest. We need to deal with our struggles. Years ago when we had Will, Karina had a wonderful career. She had dreams as a news anchor. She was a main anchor in Orlando. Something like billboards, right? Drive down I-4, there's Karina, right? Had Will. Or maybe she came to this decision. She felt this was God calling her to do it. She stepped away from that career, and she was meeting with a friend who had her husband couldn't even, he was bedridden. They were young, bedridden, so it was mostly care for the friend. And the friend stopped her one day. She goes, have you ever grieved that? Have you ever grieved walking away from that? Have you ever grieved the death of a dream, is what she asked her. She had a dream. She was going to work her way up. She was well on her way being a national newscaster. I had plenty of general managers tell me this is where she's going. She was going to move back to D.C. Her family was going to move back to D.C. They were going to have a plot of land together. That was her dream. She made a choice. I'm not going to do that. God's calling me to this. Was it better? Yes. Was it costly? Yes. Can you grieve that? Yeah. What were your dreams? What are the dreams that you had? Have you ever stopped to deal with them? How have you responded to the dreams that you've had that have been shattered? This is what crab gets into, and it gets scary. It almost feels unbiblical. But how do your shattered dreams shape your view of God? How do your shattered dreams shape your view of yourself? Advent's an invitation to deal with the darkness, to deal with shattered dreams. Crab goes on, he says, from Naomi's story, I learned that dreams for good things may shatter, but our pain will always have a purpose. It will not go away, but it will do its work. It will stir an appetite for a higher purpose. The better hope of knowing God well enough now to love him above everything else and trusting him no matter what happens. That's the work that God does in the darkness. That's the work that God does to shape us, to make him ultimate, to form us into the son, image of his son, to be about his plans and purposes and not about our plans and purposes, right? Karina doesn't make that decision. None of this is happening. Does it mean it wasn't costly? No. Does it mean there can be a bigger purpose? Yes. Know that God works in the midst of our devastating losses. And we begin to see this work in this next section. We begin to see the devoted love of God. We begin to see the devoted love of her daughter-in-law, Ruth, in the midst of her darkness, in the midst of her shattered dreams. You see it right away in verse 6. This is where the story picks up. It says, then she arose with her daughters-in-law to return from the country of Moab. For she had heard in the fields of Moab that the Lord had visited his people and given them food. They heard this famine was over, and they set to go back to Bethlehem because the Lord had visited his people and had given them food. Bethlehem was living up to its name. They remembered this is the place of God. This is the presence of God. This is the people of God. This is where God will provide. One pastor talked about this is like the story of the prodigal son. He wakes up one day and he's in the wasteland. He's like, what am I doing here? I can go get the scraps off my father's table. And he goes home. He starts going in the right direction. In the devotional that we'll go through as a church, I think it's Thursday, December 4th, he brings up that 12 times in this little account, the word return or turn is used in this dialogue. In verse 6, it says that they went to return from the country of Moab. They went on the way, in verse 7, to return to the land of Judah. Verse 8, but Naomi said to her daughters-in-law, go return, each of you, to her mother's house. Verse 10 says, go your way, for I am too old and I have a husband. There's this turn, there's this return. We see that Naomi turns back to Bethlehem. And what the author said, he said, the repeated language of turning gently encourages us to consider which direction we are turned. Are we turned towards Moab or are we turned towards Bethlehem? As Naomi turns back to Bethlehem, she is actually turning back to the Lord, to the God of steadfast kindness. When there's darkness, when there's trouble, when your dreams are shattered, where do you turn? Do we turn to the wasteland to find comfort, seek peace, find rest in things that will never provide it, that will never get it? Or do we turn to the Lord? Do we turn to Bethlehem to experience his kindness, his love, his compassion, his provision? And it was very fascinating for me studying this account. There's just a realism about it, an ordinariness we see in Naomi. One pastor says that she appears spiritually confused in chapter 1. She's praying to God for her daughters-in-law, which is a good thing. God, I want you to provide. And then God, I want them to find rest. God, I want them to have a future. And then she encourages them to go to the place where there is no rest, where there is no future, where there is no provision, where there is no God. So she's praying to the God and praying forth. Do you guys ever do this? That you're just praying and you're like, well, then I'm going to do this. You're like, no, that's not what God wants you to do. We live in Florida, so people are always talking about moving and going. I never tell people where to move. One time I have. This guy's like, hey, I got this job opportunity. I was like, that is going to end. I'm going to leave my family. They're going to stay here. I'm going to go there. I'm like, that is not going to work out well. Don't do that. One time in 20 years of this. I am not God. I'm not telling you where to go. I'll try and help you figure that out. I'll pray for you. What'd he do? He went. What happened? Done. All of it. Family destroyed. He's like, I prayed about it. I was like, I know, you're praying the wrong thing. There's this ordinary, there's this trusting and turning to God in prayer, but also there's a lot of focusing on self with Naomi. This is why it's very relatable. Verse 11 says, but Naomi said, turn back, my daughters. Why will you go with me? Have I yet sons in my womb that they may become your husbands? Turn back, my daughters, go your way. For I am too old to have a husband. If I should say I have hope, even if I should have a husband this night and should bear sons, would you therefore wait till they were grown? Would you therefore refrain from marrying? No, my daughters, for it is exceedingly bitter to me for your sake that the hand of the Lord has gone out against me. In the midst of the darkness, Naomi thinks it's all on her. It's about what she can do. And if she can't see a way of moving forward, there must not be one. This is her perspective. This is her view. And so she's kind of turning to God and she's kind of turning away from God. The devotional asks, what journey have you been on this year? And which direction are you now facing? Maybe we're in a season where we've been persistently looking for hope in the wrong places. These verses invite us to return from Moab and find hope and life in Jesus Christ, the perfect expression of God's loving kindness. It says it's time to come home. This is the call. This is the invitation of God coming for you at Christmas, a call to turn to him. Naomi experiences the devoted love of God, but she also experiences the devoted love of her daughter-in-law, Ruth. Ruth doesn't listen to Naomi when she told her to go back to the wasteland. Verse 14 says, they lifted up their voices and wept again, and Orpah kissed her mother-in-law and says, but Ruth clung to her. Genesis 2 uses the same word. It means to hold fast to your wife, to cling to something, to be committed to something. One commentator called this love without an exit strategy. This is what you're signing up for. This is what we're called to. This is what we need more of in our marriages, in our friendships. And this famous passage, this devoted love of Ruth that we see in verse 16, it says, but Ruth said, do not urge me to leave you or to return from following you, but where you go, I will go, and where you lodge, I will lodge. You shall be my people and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. May the Lord do so to me and more also, if anything but death parts me from you. It says in verse 18, and when Naomi saw that she was determined to go with her, she said no more. Naomi experienced the love of God through Ruth, this chesed love. Verse 8, it says, deal kindly with them. And it combines this love and loyalty. It's commitment and sacrifice. Again, that love without an exit strategy. Paul Miller says it's the opposite of the love of our age, which is strictly based on feelings. How many conversations have I had? I don't feel like I love them anymore. I don't feel that anymore. The biblical view is that the feelings follow the commitment. You're committed and your feelings follow. Miller said, commitment love lies at the heart of Christianity. It is Jesus' love for us at the cross, and it is to be our love for one another. He said, when feelings are the standard, we are left adrift on a turbulent sea. Every good feeling becomes a new path, so we become good at starting to love, but bad at finishing. Soon, we are lost and alone in a maze of relationships. We live in a culture that is not committed to anyone or anything. And we're called to love people as Christ has loved us. This hesed love, the committed love. You need to ask, who's God brought into your life to encourage and enrich, as Ruth did with Naomi? Who's God calling you to be committed to? To love with a love that goes beyond what's expected. To love your family in this way. To love your church in this way. To love the city in this way. To be committed to them. It's one of our prayers as we go into 2026 as a church, as we look forward to move into a new facility in a new neighborhood. What does it look like to be committed to them? But we're super thankful. Everything you see for Christmas is connected to the Edna Runner Center. You see things like Mangrove Bay and Sequesta Terrace. Why? We're committed to the place, to those who are often orphans and widows. It's costly. It takes time. This was my fault, so let's start there. I thought the presents were due next Sunday for Edna Runner. And so we went to St. Louis this past week. We woke up at 2 a.m. Friday morning and left and drove all the Friday and got home at like 10 p.m. at night. Just to get back, we had to get some things go. We knew this is what we were signing up for, okay? So this isn't a pity party. We knew this. When we got back, we got the message like, oh, the presents are due tomorrow. And so we got back. Our house looks like just don't come over this afternoon. And like a bomb went off, right? And then Chrissy and Karina jump back in the car and go shopping for presents for the kids at Edna Runner. Like, that's what they did yesterday afternoon. Is that the thing that, like, was probably the top of the agenda to do? No. You're tired. You got 1,000 different things to do. But what? We're committed to this place. We're committed to these kids. You do small little things to do it. It's a silly small example, but it becomes costly. They're like, hey, we want to be people who love this way, who show up. And we do this when we understand that's the way that Jesus loves us. The book of Ruth, like everything in the Bible, is ultimately just a pointer to Jesus. Right? Tim Keller would call the true and better Ruth. Often we think our relationship with God is based on our commitment to him. But the good news of the gospel is our relationship with God is based on his commitment to us. It's what he does, his love for us, his sacrifice for us, his never forsaking us. And as we celebrate Advent, Christmas is a reminder that even when we turn to Moab, even when we cling to things other than God to find hope and love and rest, Christmas reminds us that he comes for us. He's so committed to us that he was born into a manger. Karina was kind of sitting this up. I'm like, oh, look, it goes from a manger to a cross. It goes from the cradle to the cross. Like, that's God's commitment to us. He was born into the darkness. He lived in the brokenness of the world. He died on a Roman cross for us to bring us back into a relationship with him. Jesus will do whatever it takes to draw us to himself. He'll come die on a cross for us. He'll let you go through some very hard things if it awakens your soul and wakes you up to your need. Jesus holds on to us without an exit strategy. The scriptures say he will never leave you. He will never forsake you. It's the good news of the gospel. And we see Naomi start to catch a glimpse of this. These glimpses of grace, this dawning of light. Verse 19 to 22, we see a glimpse of hope in Naomi in the midst of her darkness. We see this glimpse of hope through the direction she goes. Verse 19 says, so the two of them went on until they came to Bethlehem. And then it gets like obnoxiously repetitive. And he just kept saying, Bethlehem, Bethlehem, Bethlehem. He's like, okay, we got the point. She turned to Bethlehem. And when they came to Bethlehem, the whole town was stirred because of them. And the woman said, is this the Naomi? She said to them, do not call me Naomi, call me Mara, for the Almighty has dealt very bitterly with me. She says, I went away full and the Lord has brought me back empty. Why call me Naomi when the Lord has testified against me and the Almighty has brought calamity upon me? Verse 22, so Naomi returned and Ruth the Moabite, her daughter-in-law with her, who returned from the country of Moab, and they came to Bethlehem at the beginning of the barley harvest. It's important to know that having hope doesn't mean you act like everything's perfect. Naomi, whose name meant pleasant, was unrecognizable. It's like, is this Naomi? She was bitter. But hope does allow you to start seeing light in the midst of darkness. I like the name of the devotional. It's called Finding Hope Under the Bethlehem Skies. Naomi has a little bit of revisionist history. She says, I went away full. She didn't. It was a famine. She left the place of the Lord to go to the wasteland. And then she says, and the Lord brought me back empty. But again, she wasn't. God had provided for her. He provided her as she returned to Bethlehem. She came to the house of bread. She came back to the place of God, the presence of God, the people of God, the provision of God. She returned with Ruth. The one who we'll learn is committed to her, who God uses to provide for her, to protect her, and in a bigger scale to leave a legacy greater than she could ever imagine. And it says that she returned at the beginning of the barley harvest. So a chapter that begins with famine in the house of bread has finished with the harvest. Hope has come to Bethlehem. This is what God does. He brings hope in the midst of darkness. So as we move to communion, take some time to dwell on, as one pastor said, the bread of life given for us. The devotional said, just like Naomi, it's easy for us to become absorbed in our circumstances. We can struggle to lift our eyes to the bigger picture. So I'll pray that you take some time as Zach and Karina will come up, to reflect some, to have the courage and confidence before God to go before him, to think about where have you experienced devastating loss? Where have your dreams been shattered? Where's life not going as you envisioned it? What's it look like to bring that to the Lord? What's it look like to respond though with hope? To experience God's committed love for you, to experience his greater purposes for you. And finally, during this Advent season, where can you see the dawning of light? Where can you see glimpses of God's grace in the midst of the darkness of this world? Jesus experienced this. He experienced it on the cross. And the scriptures say that on the night before he was betrayed, he gathered with his disciples. He knew the darkness that was coming. And he said these words, and Paul repeats them in 1 Corinthians chapter 11. It says, for I received from the Lord what I also delivered to you, that the Lord Jesus, on the night when he was betrayed, he took the bread, and when he had given thanks, he broke it. He said, this is my body, which is for you. Do this in remembrance of me. In the same way, he also took the cup after supper, saying, this is the cup of the new covenant in my blood. Do this as often you drink it in remembrance of me. For as often as you eat this bread and drink the cup, you proclaim the Lord's death until he comes. Communion is a weekly reminder for those who are followers of Jesus, for those who have put their hope, put their trust, who look to him for their peace, who look to him for their hope, to be reminded, no matter how dark it is, no matter how famished you feel, the Lord will provide. He provides his presence. He says, this is my body for you. He says, take the bread, my body given for you. This is my blood for you. I took on the darkness. I took on your sin to bring you into a relationship with me. So as we continue in worship, come forward and we take the bread and we dip it into the cup and remember the hope that you have through Jesus.